Here we go, yo.
What up?
Yo. So what's the podcast show?
It's Thursday night.
It's Thursday. Hello, everybody. It's Thursday. Welcome to the Big Planet Comics Podcast, you listener people.
Yep. Welcome.
This is episode number
42.
It's the answer.
It is the answer.
But what's the question?
Yeah, it's not important.
So my name's Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
And we're here.
Hello.
Like we always are here, or most of the time are here.
Most of us are usually here.
Yeah. So let's see. What should we say here?
All kinds of stuff.
Why don't you guys tell people what they can do?
Well, they can do all kinds of stuff, but podcast-related things is listening on the iTunes.
Yep.
And subscribing there.
Yep.
You can go to Twitter. Follow us on Twitter, at Big Planet Comics.
Yep.
And you can also follow us on Facebook.
Yep.
You guys are right.
Facebook.com/Big Planet Comics, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Indeed.
Or call Indeed. Us.
Yeah, you can call us at this phone number. 703-539-CAST.
Yeah.
Yep. It's on the webpage of BigPlanetComics.com, too. If nice. You can't remember that, or you're driving or something, listening to this.
Just use your smartphone. It's smarter than you.
You should memorize it, though. We've said it enough times.
Yeah, 703-539-CAST, even though I don't have it memorized. I had to look it up. So
just ask Siri.
Yeah, just ask Siri. She'll know. All right, so what's been going on, you guys?
All kinds of stuff.
Well, tell us.
I wrapped up the crazy Film Fest DC last week, seeing, like, 12-15 movies in 7 days or something.
Yeah, you saw Phoenix Wright, didn't you?
I did. That was
did you really?
I did. It was dorktastic. Nice. Like, the entire audience was like our people. It was really funny. There were people with, like, you know, hats that looked like cat heads and stuff. You know those nice. People.
Those are not my people.
Yeah. you like to think that.
No offense, half of the people that are listening to this.
But yeah, it was really
Somebody
funny.
Somebody just took off their cat head.
Yeah, and they were like, they're crying.
No.
Yeah.
And they put on their wolf head. They're like, now I'm angry.
But it had built-in headphones, so they're not listening anymore. So screw you guys.
It's true. But yeah, it was great. And then I've been helping my dad paint his kitchen for a week, and it's really burning me out.
Nice.
We're almost done.
Kitchens are fun to paint.
No, they're not.
No, they're fun to cook bacon and eggs in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I did that today.
Nice. Did you? Nice. So that's what Nick's been up to.
That's a good
Also,
good
so just saw Cabin in the Woods.
It's so good.
The best part is when... No, I'm not going to say that.
The best part is at the end when... Yeah.
It was really good.
It is good.
Yeah.
It's a good... What's good about it?
It's very Whedon-y. A lot of smart dialogue and...
Whedon-y.
Lots of cool twists and a lot of cool commentary on horror movies in general.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's very much like...
Scream?
Like, no, it's more like an episode of Buffy. Yeah.
Right.
But longer and with a bigger budget and crazy.
And crazy, yeah.
Yeah, but it was good.
Yeah.
Is it? What have I been up to?
I don't know. What have you been up to, Mr. Not Working Yesterday?
I didn't work. That's true. Because it was my anniversary.
Woo! Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you. And what else? Nick and I did another one of our video game music podcasts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You guys should listen to those.
Why don't you tell people what they're called?
It's called Magna Beam Live.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can get it at magnabeam.com.
Yep.
Yeah. That's our video game webpage.
Yep. It's full of the music. That's good.
Plug it up.
Get on there. Get on it. Cool. So should we talk about Free Comic Book Day?
We should. It's very soon.
Yeah, we've been getting piles of comic books in.
This year looks ridiculous.
It's going to be fun, though. We've got Jorge Aguirre, the writer of Giants Beware.
Yep.
And Jeremy Whitley, the writer of Princeless.
Yep.
Yep.
Both going to be at our Vienna stores and our College Park stores for people that listen to the show that actually live around here.
Yep. Otherwise, you can come visit on Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah, come fly. Come fly with me.
Fly down here and...
You could take the train or a bus or...
Yeah, you take the bullet train.
There you go.
You shoot yourself out of a cannon.
start walking.
Yeah. If you do decide to shoot yourself out of a cannon and it doesn't go well, don't sue me.
Yep.
Yeah.
More importantly, tell your family not to sue us.
Yeah, be like, I saw this on Mythbusters.
The Planet Comics is not endorsed shooting yourself out of a cannon.
Yeah, although
we do if it works.
Yeah, we should consider just setting up piles of cardboard boxes in our parking lot.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
For people to land on.
That'd be a new Free Comic Book Day activity.
That seems so scary. When people jump out of buildings in like movies and stuff like that, sometimes they have those big inflated things they land on.
Right.
But the most common thing they have is like a big pile of cardboard boxes.
Yeah.
Sounds safe.
I think it is, because they, like, you know, compress and...
Yeah. I think that it's more common for them to fall in a dumpster.
Yeah, that's
that
true.
That seems much, much less safe.
That's full of foam.
Or, it's, like, full of needles or something. I don't want to jump in a dumpster. Terrible idea.
Get, like, a chicken bone in your eye.
It's true.
Big Planet Comics Podcast, where you get a chicken bone in your eye.
That's our new motto, folks.
So, anything else been going on?
That's about it.
Probably, but that's good enough for now.
This is the long and short of it.
That is the long. That is just the short of it.
Yeah.
I think we've been trying to make these episodes a little bit shorter anyway.
Yeah.
Because sometimes
like, I can't handle how awesome it is. Cut it down.
Sometimes they're like 2 hours, and by the end we're like,
this comic is just a comic.
It's good. It's got 32 pages.
It does.
So should we do some viewer mail?
If there's some viewer mail, let's do it.
Did we make up a song? I need to write a viewer mail song.
You should.
Yeah. But let's make up one. Who wants to sing it? Keep it going.
The time has come.
Yeah, for viewer mail.
Yeah, we're gonna keep going.
No, that was good. The time has come viewer mail. All right, so I've got a long one here.
Oh, how long?
We were trying to decide whether or not to read this or not.
Oh my God,
so thanks a lot, Rob, for sending us this super long question.
Read it all.
No.
You can pause between seconds.
I can. I'm gonna have to stop the recording.
And this isn't like a Micro Machines commercial.
Oh, see, this is old too. This says it's got a joke about Friday the 13th.
That's what you should have done. Is like recorded this, like pre-recorded you reading it, and then like sped it up 4 times so we can hear it really fast.
That would have been good. All right, so here it goes. He says, "Oi!" I can't. He says, "Oi."
Oi, profanity.
A bit of palaver for Friday the 13th for being septic tank Yanks. And should I do all this in a British accent?
It sounds like you wrote it in a British accent.
A bit of palaver for Friday the 13th.
Nice. That's pretty good.
For being septic tank Yanks and selling dodgy before Watchmen comics at your periodical establishment. Oh, that wait, I got Australian there for a second. Yeah. Crikey. All right. The true comic book master of the mystic arts, Alan Moore, will be placing a dark incantation on your souls.
What?
For selling before Watchmen.
Oh, probably will, actually.
According to Robert. However, you can cowardly save yourself from such a cock-up. Well, you can say that, right?
Yeah.
Me asking if you could say that just made it so much worse than it actually was. By offering the soul of one or two of your podcasting mates to the bearded Dark Lord.
Sure.
To do this, you must cast at least one of the gits next to you as a character in a NAFPOXY scenario in a comic book.
Whoa.
This isn't going to make sense to people because it's all British.
Yeah. Yep.
It's like when they had that... what's the singing show? The X Factor? And yeah. They have that guy with the like a very small British accent. People are like, I can't understand that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's not going to be on it next year. For example, Nick could save himself by casting Kevin as a sexually confused parent, neglected teenager in an Alison Bechdel graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps as a furry vest-wearing elf called Unicorn Rider in an ElfQuest comic book entitled The Quest for the Rainbow of Love.
Oh, my nice. God.
So you're like casting me in things that Jared
Kevin
loves.
Would explode yeah. in anger
I would die.
If that happened.
Or perhaps Jared could cast Nick as a sidekick to Conan on a quest across Big Boobia while Conan constantly hacks apart wizards, gets busy with the ladies.
That would be awesome. I would happily do that for Nick.
Yeah, I mean, that one seems better. Or
I'd happily do that for you.
There's a lot more here. I'm going to skip a little bit of this. Or Nick and Kevin could cast Jared as a House of Night, Twilight, Elric-type possessor of a demonic sword, compelling him to cry a lot with lots of introspective internal monologue. Speak in emo-type dialogue and decapitate any anthropomorphic rabbits in a Usagi Yojimbo graphic novel.
That's like me every Wednesday about 7:30 at night.
I feel like you guys definitely... I'm going to hope that I'm not the one that gets picked here.
Yeah.
Because I'm just
you
like...
suffer.
I just like go into misery and you guys get to do cool stuff.
That's true.
So, yeah. He says, the Northampton Necromancer trusts that you will use your knowledge of your fellow podcasters well.
So do we have to decide which one of us is happening to?
Yeah.
Well, clearly it would be Nick because he gets the coolest one.
Yeah, let's just do Nick because Jared turns into an emo.
Yeah.
I turn into...
Do we think of our own scenarios or do I just have to do that?
I think we're just going to pick one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Might as well.
You hanging out with Conan would be awesome.
That yeah.
Would
be pretty sweet.
By Crom. That is our answer. And he says, regards, Planeteer Lob. Rob, not Lob.
Lob.
He's cutting his own deal in advance of reading Before Watchmen.
That's nice. Probably a good idea.
All right. And then we have another question. This is also about Before Watchmen. Thanks for the question, Rob. Sorry I didn't read the whole thing, but it's a lot. I was running out of breath. this is from Philip Slingerland. He's a new question
nice.
Asker.
Hello, new question asker.
Hello, new Philip. So his is like a more serious question about Before Watchmen. Do you guys feel like the Before Watchmen comics can live up to the standard? You answered that way too early.
Oh.
Do you feel like the Before Watchmen comics can live up to the standard of Moore and Gibbons?
Yes. No.
Yeah, I'm going to just say no.
Yep.
Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. No. You think maybe?
Mm. I think some will be really fun or really awesome because they just have really good creative teams. But like the level of technical storytelling expertise that Moore brought in just will not be matched by any of these writers. I mean, I don't think any of them will try. I'd be impressed if they did, but
yeah.
Yeah, especially, I mean, some of the people like Len Wein is not like a guy who I think of as like...
Well, he's writing all the backups, so...
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
And, he's I mean, they've good. Got some good writers. Brian Azzarello is writing some.
Darwin
he's
Cook,
good sometimes.
You know, he's
good
writing, stuff. And then J.G. Jones is drawing.
Yeah, and then Darwin Cook is writing and drawing one, and then writing another one that Amanda Connor's drawing, I think, so...
Yeah. Yeah, so it'll be cool. It just won't be as adept or challenging of the medium as Watchmen was. And
So he says, which series are you most looking forward to?
Is I don't this, remember which one? Ones they are. Are eight of
the
them?
Minuteman one, probably, because that's the one that's written and drawn by Darwin Cook.
Yeah.
So that's guaranteed gold.
That is going to be awesome.
Yeah, that's definitely mine, too.
Because Darwin Cook did DC New Frontier, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, just any, like, old-timey stuff, Cook is amazing at.
And then he has a valid, if pervy, question at the end.
Wow.
Why the hell has Adam Hughes been assigned to draw Dr. Manhattan series and not the Silk Spectre one?
Well, Amanda Connor is drawing the Silk Spectre one, so that answers that question.
Good
solution.
And, you know, I mean, I'm sure Adam Hughes will pay loving attention to Dr. Manhattan's dong.
Yeah.
And then everybody else will, too.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to be in there.
Mm, oh,
I bet it won't.
Interesting.
I bet it will.
I don't think it will be.
I think it will be.
Will it? It's it's iconic.
Yeah, it is. What a challenge.
That's one of the things I was wondering. Are these going to be as...
Like the same content level rating?
Yeah.
Well, the comedian one will have to be, right? Okay, so...
Interesting, yeah.
Let's just talk. Let's talk about... thanks for the question, Phil. I should say that. If you guys have questions, send them to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com or call the aforementioned podcast hotline, which nobody seems to be doing. We might have to shut that thing down at 703-539-CAST.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah, come on. We want to hear your voices on the air.
Melodious tones.
Yeah, so we should just talk about Before Watchmen in general. There's been this stuff going on online recently.
Hoopla.
About, there was a Comics Alliance article that kind of stirred up a lot, and then people have been writing a lot of their own things, both about Before Watchmen and about the Avengers movie. And
I just heard about the Avengers stuff. I didn't even think about that one.
Yeah, so the Before Watchmen thing is basically like Alan Moore thinks it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
And people think that maybe DC should have a little more respect for creators and their wishes. And I don't know. I don't know where I fall in this argument. I feel like I should be, you know, completely on the side of creators in situations like this.
Yeah.
Are you?
But at the same time, Alan Moore does stuff with other people's characters. I mean, I'm sure, like, Lewis Carroll doesn't want to see Alice having sex with... Who was it in, like, Lost Girls?
Wendy. Yeah, I'm sure.
Peter Pan. And
however, the thing here is that Lewis Carroll dead.
So? Well, so what?
And it's out of copyright.
So if Alan Moore was dead, it would be all right?
If it's out of copyright.
Well, and the same people making the argument are people that are saying the same thing about Jack Kirby, basically. I mean, so, you know, that Jack Kirby's not getting any...
Oh, he is now, though.
Yeah, they actually added, this is the thing that happened. So people were kind of up in arms about him not getting a creator credit on the Avengers movie.
Right.
But now they're adding that in. Yeah. I don't know if that was already going to be there, and they just said that it's there or what. So, I don't know. It's a little weird. I come down on both sides. On one side, of course, you know, in a wonderful world.
Yeah.
The creators will always get their wish and things like that will happen. But on the other hand, you know, these guys sign contracts.
Yeah.
And Alan Moore could have produced Watchmen through an independent publishing house. I mean, a lot of people were doing stuff similar to that at the same time. You know, there were tons of guys that were publishing their own comics or publishing creator-owned stuff in 1985. I mean, there was, like, Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
I think Stan Sakai was doing Usagi stuff then, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Cerebus and and tons of other stuff. So, I mean, Alan Moore did make the decision to work for a major publishing house, at least in the comics world.
Yeah.
I mean, does that matter?
They kind of belong to them. I mean,
yeah, well, yeah, they do. Yeah. I mean, that's the contract that's signed. Jared,
I mean, Steve Gerber created like Howard the Duck, and he's in like a lot of stuff. It's not like he's like, well, he's dead now, but like he was never like, you shouldn't use my character in that way because he's not.
Actually, he was.
Was he?
Yeah, yeah.
He did do that.
You picked like the worst example.
Yeah. Nice. There was an entire issue called Destroyer Duck, which was a Howard the Duck knockoff character that creators did free stuff for to raise money for Steve Gerber to try to not get his completely sued by Marvel in the lawsuit.
Need to bone up on my history.
Yep.
I know. Jared seems like he's disapproving over there.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. Like, I'm excited to read some of these things. At the same time, I'm just like, there's so much good stuff happening in comics right now that it just feels like creatively bankrupt in so many ways. It's like, this is the best thing DC could do, which admittedly might be the best thing DC could come up with. They're certainly not knocking it out of the park for brand new characters or anything, but it's disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, it's, you know, not the creatively not the greatest thing.
No. Yeah. My main thing is just like, if it's good, I'll enjoy it. It's fine. I don't really. And people get too wrapped up in that whole thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen, like, in regards to Avengers, people saying that because of Marvel's treatment of Jack Kirby, which, granted, was pretty awful, especially all the stuff with Jim Shooter in the 80s, that, like, just even working on any of those characters is, you know, like, doing a wrong.
Interesting.
Yeah. But then
people are full of themselves.
I feel like some of those people who tend to be maybe more of the independent comics community people, I don't know. I think it's kind of interesting because if you look at some of the people that have worked on these characters, like guys like the Hernandez brothers or Kate Beaton or James Sturm, you know, guys that I feel like people respect.
Yeah.
You know, do they feel like they're doing terrible things by making Fantastic Four stories or I don't know. You guys don't seem very interested in talking about
I'm thinking
this.
About it. Yeah, like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of those people didn't have to, and they did it because they loved the characters. And I think that's, you know, it's not like when, like going back to Todd McFarlane when he was doing Spawn, is like, hey, you know, Dave Sim, you want to do a story with me, you know, because you like the character and you like what we're doing. These are companies hiring people to do corporate products.
But I'm sure all the people that are doing them seem to be people that want to do them.
Right.
Darwin Cook is all about that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Nobody's being forced to make these comics.
I don't know, actually. No. Think about it. If you are working for DC and they come and give you this thing and you turn it down.
Well, Darwin Cook
but that's still not. You're not forced to do it. Well, if you don't want the job, you don't take the job. I mean, look at Chris Roberson, who was the writer of iZombie, and he just, because of all this, quit DC, said he's not going to work for him anymore.
Yeah.
Granted, iZombie had already been canceled at that point, but he was getting superhero work as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I kind of applaud him for, you know, if he believes in it, you stick by your guns.
Sure, I approve of that. But there's also the sort of thing that, like, if you're approached by a company and you're offered work and that's the only thing they've offered you, do you take it or not?
Well, then you do it. But if you have a moral problem with it, then you know, you either sit with it and deal with that, or you don't do it. I mean, they still have that decision to make.
Yeah. Obviously, Darwin Cook doesn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, no, I don't think he does at all.
I mean, he does. He has work.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, he works on other characters that DC owns. I mean, that's what all these people do. So I don't know. I think it's pretty interesting though.
Yep.
Anyway, that's getting pretty dark.
Yeah. Yep.
You guys usually were so happy. Now everybody's so sad.
I mostly don't care.
Yeah, I think that's I can tell.
Whatever.
All right. Yeah, but I do want to say I the thing that Nick was talking about Alan Moore kind of making a living off of working on other people's characters, I think makes him a little bit of a hypocrite.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, half of his stuff has been like referencing other characters and books and.
Right, but all the stuff he was working on, you never had the creator of that product saying, "Don't do this, please."
No.
Well, you had Great Ormond Hospital in England, who owned the rights to Peter Pan, saying that they didn't want him to publish Lost Girls.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And that happened.
Yeah. I mean, it's an excuse because like the people are dead. I'm sure like, you know, the creators would not want that to happen if you were alive.
Yeah, J.M. Barrie did not want Alan Moore writing lesbian orgy comics about Wendy. Yeah. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah.
You think he might have?
He's pretty weird.
You think he might have been into it. Anyway, yeah. So
anyway, intriguing.
Yeah,
intriguing.
If you guys have opinions on that, send us what you think because it's something interesting,
and debatable.
It's definitely stuff that people are talking about right now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe we should do some reviews. This review song will cheer us up.
Okay.
We love comics. They're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Sure is.
It sure is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's time for reviews, you guys.
Yep.
Speaking of the Avengers.
What Avengers?
What Avengers? Speaking of the movie The Avengers with Uma Thurman.
Like Smith Steed, yeah.
Isn't in England it's called Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes because everybody in England.
No, it's called Avengers Assemble.
Avengers Assemble.
Oh, nice. It's everywhere else actually except here.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But because America cannot do things. Yeah.
And they can't remember anything.
Apparently it's already made a bajillion dollars too.
All right, so we're going to talk about, what is this called? Is this called AVX Versus?
Yeah.
Okay.
I checked in the Indicia because there's so many different things on the cover of this book. It says like Avengers, X-Men, the X-Men versus AVX.
It's ridiculous. Really confusing. And I had a few people actually who were buying it that thought it was Avengers versus X-Men number one.
Yeah, they're like, I've already got this.
Is that because it says Avengers versus X-Men number one on the front?
Somebody was buying it. He's like, I don't know if I want to buy this big crossover, but I'm gonna get this first issue and see what I like. And I was like, it's not really the main series. And he was like, yeah, whatever, and bought it anyway.
He's like, these guys are fighting for no reason.
Yeah.
He's like, why the hate?
Why are they just fighting? All right, so Avengers versus X-Men number one.
Excellent question.
This is exactly what you expect it to be. It's the Avengers fighting X-Men. Basically,
I like that you just called it Avengers versus X-Men number one.
Yeah. Avengers versus X-Men versus number one.
Yeah, there you go.
So basically, the basic gist of it is that there's two fights per issue, each one written and drawn by different people. And at the end of each fight, there's a winner announced.
That was the funniest part to me.
I don't
want to say who won. Because
you can't.
But at the end of like the first fight, they're like, winner.
I thought that was awesome, actually, because like too often in superhero comics, either like people go up against each other and it's a draw, someone runs away, someone is defeated by someone else, or it's like they become friends at the end, or, you know, it's very rare that you actually get like a head to head who would actually come out in this.
Yeah, there's no team up in this. They just actually fight and then one of them wins and flies away or whatever.
Yeah. So the first story in here is written by Jason Aaron and drawn by Adam Kubert. And it's
pretty good.
It's an expansion
story
of the fight. Yeah. from Avengers versus X-Men number one, right?
Yeah. It's a really deep story.
Or Avengers versus X-Men two.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really deep story about
how Iron Man and Magneto are fighting, and then
one of them
wins.
we've both suffered as, you know, different people, and we've both been persecuted. Yeah. I for my alcoholic problem, and you for your, you know, anti-human stance.
And it's really silly.
It's really silly, but it's like pretty much exactly what you want. If you want to see them fight, it's kind of they have like neat ideas for ways they're fighting, and
yeah, that's
like
true.
You know, like Tony Stark is smart, so like he has like anti-magnetic, you know, costume or whatever.
And like
iron.
Magneto was in the Holocaust, so he talks about that.
he does talk about that. Yeah.
He does,
as he always does.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I do think it was dumb-ish.
Oh, of course.
But then at the same time, it's
exactly
they do, like you said, they come up with like a kind of fun ideas like about how they would fight. But it's just fighting.
Like you said, it's not like, you know, non-dialogue, just punching and smashing. Like, they're coming up with different tactics. They're discussing what they're trying to do. They're having conversations as they're fighting. So, yeah, it's like a well-thought-out, awesome action scene.
Yeah.
So, and then the second story is Namor and the Thing.
Yep.
And that's written by Catherine Immonen and drawn by Stuart Immonen. But was this actually in an issue?
They kind of fought in the beginning. Like, all of these are like kind of a couple panels in Avengers vs. X-Men number two where they're like, these guys are fighting, and that's it, you know, and this kind of expands on those. So
yeah, so this is going to be six issues of this once a month. Over the 6 months, and I guess each one, so it's not going to be any original fights. It's just going to be expanding on things that are in the comic.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah. You see a lot of the fights and then there's not really a resolution to them. And some people are like, you know, if you want Avengers versus X-Men, you're like, I want to see a winner.
Yeah,
so this is kind of the...
Yeah, I think this is a good example. A lot of people will be like, oh, there's this big crossover. I don't want to buy everything.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you don't have... This is like a perfect example of something you don't have to buy.
That's true.
But if you do want to see this, you know, it just expands on the story.
Yeah, I feel like this is the kind of...
Or expands on the fighting.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like they kind of could have put this in the issue, but then it would have felt like too much. Like if it was just like it stopped for like a long fight in the middle of each part, you know.
And this is kind of what they did in Fear Itself, except the fights were spread out between all these other tie-in comics. So
yeah. True, yeah.
It was a much harder to follow.
Yeah. The cool thing is that this is pretty much the only tie-in, other than like, you know, the main Avengers and X-Men books. This is the only like miniseries that's devoted to Avengers versus X-Men.
Oh, yeah. I guess it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, that's weird. Usually there's like...
Like Fear Itself, there was like 20 of them.
Yeah, I think wasn't one of them called like Avengers versus X-Men or something?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Or like Hulk versus X-Men.
Fear Itself.
Yeah. Hulk versus Dracula.
Hulk versus Dracula.
Oh, God. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's not much else to say about this.
Yeah, it's fun.
At the beginning, they say, if you want plot, you're reading the wrong comic. Yeah. And that is
true. Do they actually say that?
Yeah, they do.
That's
intro page.
That's,
there you go.
That's the truth. All right. So, moving on to Battle Scars number 6.
Oh, yes.
We're gonna,
should we talk about this? Should we talk about this at the end?
I think we can talk.
Because I really want to go into spoilers with this.
Oh. Well, I think we can do that because nobody buys this comic.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, if you don't want to hear all these spoilers, just skip ahead about 5 minutes. And
This will have some spoilers in it, definitely.
Yeah, anybody who's going to pick up this issue who wasn't already buying Battle Scars is going to pick it up because they already know what happened in it.
Yeah, yeah, true.
So I don't feel too bad talking about it.
All right, let's go.
So Nick is the only person that's actually been reading Battle Scars.
Yeah, so I've been reading Battle Scars from the beginning, and Marvel's been saying, it's kind of like Spins Out of Fear itself. Marvel's been saying, like, you need to read this because at the end of the series, it's going to change the Marvel Universe. And, you know, I was like, oh, that's cool. And it's been about this guy named Marcus Johnson who was fighting during Fear itself. He was like just a regular soldier for like the U.S. Army fighting overseas and getting wrapped up in all the Fear stuff. And then he comes back home and his mother gets killed and like all these kind of supervillain assassins are trying to kill him. And it was actually really good. Like the thing is, like, at first it was like it's like pretty focused on him, and it's like it's very like grounded. It's like he's seeing the Marvel Universe through like a normal person's eyes, and he's like, this is all crazy. What is this? What is that? And like
how many normal persons
eyes? So many old ones. And you know, in issue 4, at the end, he finds out that he's Nick Fury's son.
Wait. You're leaving out an important ethnic characteristic of Marcus here.
Oh, well, he's black.
Yep.
Normally, that wouldn't matter except for the end of this.
Yep.
So, like, he finds out he's Nick Fury's son, and I was like, oh, okay, that's a big change to the Marvel Universe. I guess that's what they were talking about. And he has this friend that's with him. He calls Cheese as, like, his buddy from the war, and he's kind of helping him, like, get away from all these assassins. And so in this issue, Nick Fury and him are kind of tied up and they escape from the bad guys and everything gets wrapped up. And then at the very end, he's in like S.H.I.E.L.D. in one of the helicarriers or something. And he's talking to some S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and they're like, all right, here we go. We got Nick Fury. And you're like, wait, what? And
who at this point is bald.
Yeah, he shaves his head.
And wearing an eye patch.
Yeah, during the course of the series, somebody pulls out his eye.
Of course.
Because they want him. They're like, we want you to be like your father. And like, pull out his eye or something like that.
Awesome.
And so then...
It was the editors at Marvel.
Yeah, right.
We're like, we want you to be like your father. Yeah.
So somebody pulls out his eye. And then in this issue, there's an explosion. So he gets like a scar on his face. And then at the end, he shaves his head. So he basically looks like the Ultimate Universe Nick Fury / the Nick Fury in the Avengers and Marvel movies that has been around, like Samuel Jackson.
Yeah.
And his partner Cheese shows up and he's like, hey, what's up? And he's like, here's Agent Phil Coulson or whatever his name is, like from the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
And so that's his real name, which just got revealed there. And they're like, he's like, wait, Nick Fury? And he's like, yeah, his name was Nick Fury Jr., but his mom changed it when he was a little kid.
To
hide his identity. Yeah. And you're like, wait, what? And then Nick Fury's like, oh, now the Infinity Formula, because something happens during the course of this where his blood gets messed up or something. And he's like, the Infinity Formula is out of my bloodstream, so I'm going to start aging and dying now. And so, like, he's basically the new Nick Fury in the Marvel Universe.
Yep.
And he's the movie version / Ultimate Universe version of Nick Fury with his pal, Phil Coulson. It's so weird.
Yeah, it's very strange. I mean, I didn't read the rest of it, so I don't know how out of nowhere it was.
Yeah, it is very out of nowhere. Because if you read the whole series, it's pretty simple, straightforward. And then at the end, it's just like slapped on, like, I'm Nick Fury. And then, what?
It seems like a really weird decision. I mean, it's not a weird decision.
They talk about it in the back.
It makes total sense. Yeah. But the weird thing about it is that Marvel seems to have decided to place their movie universe, like, to base it on the Ultimate Universe, but not, like, now, like, from 10 years ago.
Yeah,
right.
And so to kind of take these steps to make the regular Marvel Universe more like that really, like, muddies the line between the Ultimate Universe and the regular universe.
Yeah, definitely.
And it makes me feel like they're gonna... I don't know, is there more of this stuff that do you think they'll do? Is there stuff like this that
other movie stuff that they're integrating? Well, they have Avengers Assemble, which is a weird thing because
that's
it's
true.
Like just the characters in the movie, and there's not a clear reason why they'll just those guys in that book.
And nobody likes that book.
Yeah.
And they've definitely taken Hawkeye and they've made him look like the movie version of Hawkeye.
That's true.
Like their reasoning in this is, it makes sense. It's like, we want kind of to capitalize on the movie, and if people are have comics fresh from the movies, and they're like, I want to read a comic, and they're like, it's Nick Fury. Like, why is he this old white guy? Like, I
yeah,
don't
that would be weird to come in and be like, you made Nick Fury from the movies into a white dude? Like, yeah. That would be weird.
Well, one of our customers came in, and he said his wife, like, saw this comic, and she was like, oh, it's Nick Fury.
Yeah.
Like, when she saw, you know, the new Nick Fury. And the thing is, about 200,000 people read Avengers books.
Yeah, it's true.
Probably about 50 million people will see the Avengers movie, assuming it makes about $500 million. It's probably going to make a little bit more than that. But
yeah.
I'd say, you know, probably about 50 million people.
Yeah.
So you're looking at huge, huge numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at like 2,500% of your current audience or something like that.
Yeah. And I think they feel like now with AVX and the Avengers movie coming out, that they're going to have a flood of new readers coming in. And so they don't want them to be too confused. But then again, it's also kind of, I don't know, it's like, they're not stupid.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of them probably are, but, you know, but most people will be able to figure it out.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, it's probably smart.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about it.
But then a lot of people are going to, you know, people that are already reading comics are the only people that are really going to care about this. The new people aren't going to come in and be like, oh, this is dumb.
Yeah, true.
Because none of them are going to read Battle Scars number six. Except when they hear about what happened.
And I know he's going to show up. He's about to show up in like a bunch of like Marvel Universe comics. He's basically going to be the new Nick Fury in everything.
Yeah, so I'm assuming he's going to be in Avengers versus X-Men.
Yeah.
And
well, maybe not, but maybe.
Probably.
Probably.
Yeah, he might.
It's a good way to introduce him to everybody.
That's probably how like the series will end. He'll come and broker a peace between them.
Yeah, there will be like after the credits page on the last issue, he'll show up and he'll talk to people. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a weird thing.
Yeah.
It was definitely a thing that happened.
Yep. How weird would it be if Marvel kind of rebooted their entire line to be based on the movies?
I mean, isn't that what just happened?
Sort of. Yep. But if they did it in a way that were like DC did, like a reboot where the movie universe and the comic universe were exactly the same universe.
So actually, I was actually thinking about that because we've talked a few times. I don't think on the podcast, but just like in casual conversation about how DC and Marvel tend to look at each other's successes and then copy them.
Yeah,
emulate.
Yeah, and whether it's, you know, DC putting out their old series called Invasion and trade paperback right when Marvel's doing Secret Invasion or Marvel putting out a series called Identity Disc when Identity Crisis is coming out. You know, they copy each other. Yeah. And so we were talking about, you know, is Marvel going to relaunch their whole universe? It doesn't seem like they need to because their sales are pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, considering where sales in comics are right now, their sales are good.
I feel like,
but this makes me think they're not going to do it because it seems like they're taking those strides within their continuity.
Yeah.
Which I don't really care about continuity, but I'll be glad if that does not happen.
Yeah.
Just because I don't want to read a bunch of origin stories again.
And it's fine it'd be fine if they had both Nick Furies. I hope that's my only fear is that they will try to phase out the old Nick Fury.
I'm pretty sure that's what's going to happen.
But I don't think so. I think they'll keep him around.
They don't tend to have like those legacy characters the way that DC does. Like
that's
like
true.
How
like
they have like two
Flashes
or a bunch of Green Lanterns.
Yeah.
I don't really feel like
That'll be good because then it'll be like for the people in the know who are really excited about it, it'll be like, wait, there was another Nick Fury? But like, yeah, it was his dad. Here's old adventures from the 60s. And
yeah, they might do something like
Nick Fury and son.
Or, you know, like when Bucky became Captain America, Steve Rogers became Super Soldier and he still had his own story going on, but he was a different character. So, you know, they might do something like that. I don't know. Yeah. Just start calling him. Maybe he'll be like Sergeant Fury again or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, but no, think about it. Steve Rogers is back as Cap now. They're definitely resetting towards the movie in some ways.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason why he came back as Captain America. But, you know, whatever. Yeah. So speaking of Captain America.
Yep.
And Hawkeye.
true.
We've got another Marvel book.
We love Marvel this
week.
Yeah, so
people often accuse us of not talking about enough superhero comics, but I feel like this week we got a good chunk of
them. And they will accuse us of never reading DC comics.
Yeah, so
we actually don't have any DC comics.
Yeah, we don't. But the thing with DC comics is they just relaunched everything and we spent
go back to our old podcast.
Yeah.
We reviewed every new issue.
Every one.
But we'll talk about the new ones they're relaunching.
Yeah, we're going to try to talk about new creative teams more because a lot of these books, you know, they switch creative teams a lot and the direction totally changes.
Yes.
We did it with Secret Avengers. We'll do it when Jeff Lemire takes over Justice League Dark and some of the other things.
Matt Kidd takes over Frankenstein.
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm excited about that. Yeah. So this is Captain America and Hawkeye, formerly Captain America and Bucky.
The thing is, I don't know what this series is actually going to be called, because I think it's just Captain America and, because I think it changes.
It
after,
does.
Like,
it'll be like
line.
Supporting character and Captain America.
Yeah.
So it's like Marvel 2-in-1.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or like Marvel Team Up or something
or like
that.
Captain America Team Up.
Or it's like Avenging Spider-Man.
Yeah, basically. It's in that tradition.
Yeah. So this is... I don't know. I don't really have a lot to say about this story, so you guys talk about this. So, Jared, you talk about a superhero comic for once.
Well, first we'll talk about that. Cullen Bunn, he's done The Damned, which was a miniseries about
I should say that Battle Scars was written by Chris Yost and drawn by Scott Eden.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and this is by Cullen Bunn and Alessandro Vitti. Okay.
So Bunn, he did The Damned, which is basically a mobster comic where there were demons running around, so it was a mix of those two genres. Which did okay, and then he had his first really big hit, which was The Sixth Gun, which I think we talked about on here, which is basically a supernatural horror western, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's really good.
So
now
this
he's starting to dip his toes in
the water. Yeah, this is one of the first times he's really done a lot of superhero stuff.
He did some Superman Batman stories.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And he wrote another Marvel
thing. He was
thing.
Involved in Fear Itself, The Fearless. Sort of.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He wrote parts of that.
So. Which, yeah, there you go. But yeah, so again, this is another small press guy who's moving into the Marvel stable in a big way, because he has another comic out this week that he's the new writer on. So when was it that we talked about then Captain America and Hawkeye were running around together and kind of feeling each other out as
Secret Avengers?
That was Secret Avengers.
Yeah, and that was when we talked about when they relaunched Secret Avengers with Rick Remender and various artists. Yeah.
So we talked about that one. And again, that was, again, moving Hawkeye up as like making him much more of a prominent character. Again, probably because of the movie.
Yeah.
So anyway, this one, Cap and Hawkeye are off on some mission trying to figure out why people disappeared. I haven't read the few issues before this one. It was Captain America and Bucky. So basically, people have been disappearing in the desert, and they go out to figure out what's going on, and there's a secret government facility, and they just start fighting people immediately, which, of course, Captain America disagrees with, and I thought was very strange.
Yeah.
And then the twist is that, they weren't going to fight. That people are just coming up to see what they're doing.
That is in fitting with the way they've been portraying
Hawkeye
recently as, like, kind of a hothead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see if he shows up like that in the movie.
Probably.
Well, it's Jeremy Renner. I mean... Yeah. That dude is basically Patrick Swayze in Point Break.
True.
One of the things that's different about this book is before it was Captain America, Bucky was all stories from the past, and this is in current continuity.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty straightforward story. It's cool for new readers who don't want any, to be bogged down in continuity and stuff. It's just Captain America and Hawkeye going on a crazy adventure.
Fighting. Yep.
Well, they're fighting...
Awesome stuff.
Mutated dinosaur things.
Yep.
Yep.
It's awesome. Yeah.
My only problem with this was I thought Bunn did a really good job writing the characters, and it was exactly like Remender. It was really good interplay between the two of them. The art by Vitti, just like the faces were like kind of like square and chunky and just didn't show emotion very well and often looked like each other, like way too similar.
Yeah.
So that was okay, but not very impressive.
Yeah, I wasn't too terribly engaged by the story. It's very like... by the numbers, we'll go check out a thing, and then it's crazier than we thought it was, and then we fight dudes.
Yeah.
Which, I think I feel like they're really testing the waters to see how interested people are in Hawkeye and if they can build up Hawkeye enough to give him his own series and give him his own movie.
And they're also kind of trying to simplify stories to make them easily accessible. But it's definitely a little so-so.
Yeah.
It's good, but it's not like...
It's not like Brubaker's Captain America.
No. Yeah, which was a revolutionary new direction.
And not as good as Captain America and Bucky either, I don't think.
Yeah.
Which was also Brubaker. So.
Yeah, I think they're... I don't know. They're trying to establish their kind of personalities and get people to see how they are.
Yeah, but Nick, you said Secret Avengers did that.
So. Yeah, and better.
Secret Avengers was a lot better.
I would read the Secret Avengers issues about them because they're pretty good.
Yeah. Do you want to jump to the other one that he wrote this week?
No, we'll do it later because I don't want to talk about any more Marvel books at the moment. let's get into an indie book.
What else you get?
We got what do we got? Folly.
Is that next?
Yeah, that's next.
All right.
This is who wrote this? Hans Rickheit,
a really weird dude.
A really, really weird dude who likes to write about really, really weird stuff. I don't know. Who wants to try to describe this thing?
All right, so Folly.
Yeah.
You're gonna do it. Go for it.
Nice.
Folly is. I don't know if this was like web comics or just short.
It was a series of mini comics.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, was it?
Okay. Yeah.
It feels like more that. Sense. Yeah. Basically, Folly is like kind of the most messed up David Cronenberg, David Lynch mashup you can imagine, with a lot of stuff bordering on child pornography.
Yep, that's definitely true.
Summary successful.
It's so weird. It's hard to describe it. It's just a bunch of short sequences of stuff happening, where there's one where like this, one of the main characters, I don't know, this main thing that shows up a lot of, is this guy with like a teddy bear head.
Yeah, that's in like, they're like basically two sets of stories and some shorts, but I think his set is called Chrome Fetus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a really pretentious name, but whatever.
Yeah. And basically, it's like this guy goes around and weird stuff happens. He takes a cage into a room, opens a drawer, pulls out this weird mutated blob.
You're just looking at the pages. Yeah.
Is also kind of like a Jim Woodring world.
Yeah, there's a comment by Jim Woodring on the back.
There you go.
He grabs a blob, pulls a kitten out, puts a kitten into a machine. A machine turns the kitten into food. He eats the food. Then as he eats the food, this weird thing comes out of his mouth. And it's basically just stuff like that.
Yeah, like that part with the main character, who I guess is a bear.
Sure.
He's got like a teddy bear head.
Yeah, he's got a head like a bear. That reminded me a lot of Eraserhead, in that it was like, you know, it's like a linear story, but it's just like a lot of really weird stuff happening.
Yeah.
That I think can kind of be interpreted in its own way.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the beginning of the book.
It's almost a framework for the story.
Yeah, and there's some funny short things that are mixed in with that that are...
There's one really funny one. There's a couple really funny ones.
The one about the kid's dad getting run over.
Yeah.
That's the way things are funny in this book. Poor children's fathers get run over.
It's really hilarious.
And then it kind of switches to this second storyline about these two girls.
Yeah.
And named Cochlea and Eustacia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're just these kind of little troublemaker girls who wear bandit masks
dressed.
Yeah, I guess, except they look very underaged and they're not wearing any pants.
And a lot of creatures put things into their orifices.
Yep, yeah. That's definitely a thing that happens.
Yeah.
And so they're again in the surreal world of monsters and weird
somebody
objects.
Somebody eats a lollipop covered in hair.
It's weird.
That's
it's
really weird.
I will say this guy is a great artist. He's done some really cool stuff. He's got a great imagination in here.
Yeah, and he's very good at, like, that kind of, you know, like you were saying, Cronenberg, that kind of body horror of, like, you know, people deforming in weird ways.
And the storytelling is pretty clear. Like, even though there's weird stuff that doesn't make any sense happening, you can follow it pretty easily. Like, you're not lost. Like where's this going? Like, you follow it pretty easy.
Yeah, yeah. It's just...
I just didn't know if there's a point to this.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was with it. I mean, I feel like a lot of things can be abstract, but then you can interpret them in different ways and get things out of them. With this, I wasn't sure so much.
This is more of those things that, like, it's like David Cronenberg without the actual context. Like, not the context, like the metatextual stuff. Like, it's just, like, weird stuff, and that's it.
Yeah.
I thought the best story in here was this thing called Hail Jeffrey, which is about this kind of king that just, like, shoots people in a crowd. But that also has, like, the most disturbing, like...
child pornography thing.
No, yeah. It's I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's enough.
If you like really weird David Cronenberg type stuff, you'll probably like this.
But I like that stuff. Like, I love stuff like that. Yeah. I love Jim Woodring. I love David Lynch. I love Cronenberg. And I don't know. There was something about this book.
It's a little, like, too disturbing.
Yeah, but it has a little funny sense of humor, too.
Yeah.
That kind of takes pot shots at, like, government and, you know, technology and stuff like that. But overall,
I just feel like he could have done something with this and he didn't.
Yeah, he has another book called Squirrel Mother, from what I understand. That's a little bit more linear, but I haven't read it.
I haven't read that either.
So,
this is more just weird.
All my indie cred.
The thing is, these are all, like, mini comics that are kind of put in a book, and it's not, there's no, like, story or anything.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, so that's Folly.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on to a different book.
Let's try a different one.
Let's do a different one.
How different?
Very different. This is Jerusalem Chronicles from the Holy City by Guy Talil. Or is it Guy?
It's Guy.
It's Guy because he's French.
Yep.
Yeah, so Guy Talil he's written a few of these travelogues before. Yep. Pyongyang's probably the most famous, I would assume.
Yeah.
And then he did Shenzhen.
Yep.
And
Burma Chronicles.
Yeah, Burma Chronicles. And now Jerusalem, which is about him spending a year in Jerusalem to write the book.
No.
Partially, and because his wife is in...
his wife is with Médecins Sans Frontières, and so she's posted to Jerusalem, and he's just there as, like, stay-at-home dad.
That's Doctors Without Borders for the non-French-speaking people.
Yes.
Yeah, so Yeah, I don't know. What do you think, Jared?
I thought it was very interesting because the thing that was, like, we've talked about, what was it, How to Understand Israel in 60 Days, and then Joe Sacco, his kind of his breakout book was Palestine, about going to Palestine and the West, going to Gaza Strip. And
yeah, oddly well-covered material in comics.
Yeah, which was strange. But the thing I liked about this is that one of the few where it's someone living there rather than visiting. So you get like a very different experience. This is not like really investigative journalism. It's Guy and his family and like saying like, where do I find a good playground for the kids?
Yeah.
And
it's like his family trying to adapt to living in Jerusalem, which is a crazy place.
Yeah. Like how do I commute when they put up all these barrier walls to prevent suicide bombers from getting across? And so it's got a lot of mixed in stuff about the politics and like the people there and stuff, but it's also a lot of him just being like, I want to find an awesome thing to draw and I need to go to this tourist spot. And so I thought it was fascinating. So.
Yeah. The thing about this is like, if you want like a linear story out of this, you're not quite going to get that. You kind of get,
well,
like,
it's linear. I mean, it takes place in order. But.
Yeah, well, yeah. But like,
like a
plot. There's
not a real narrative.
There's no narrative. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no like act one, act two. It's just like, here's what happened on this day. Here's what happened on that day. And the most you're going to get out of this is like a kind of an understanding of the daily life in Jerusalem and how it's viewed through an outsider who doesn't quite understand why all these things are happening.
Well, that's what DeLisle has always been really good at. Like right. Is it Pyongyang or Pyongyang? Anyway,
whatever.
I don't know. Yeah. But in that book, I mean, he did a really good job. It's like people know a little bit about North Korea.
Yeah.
But by going through his daily routine, I think he was there as an animator in that one.
Right.
I think he does a really good job of like illuminating more like why things happen as opposed to just what's happening. And I think he does a really good job of that in this book too. It's like, just showing like what people have to deal with.
Like some simple stuff. Like there's like a Palestinian minivan that takes people around.
Yeah. Like the transit system's really interesting.
Yeah. And there's a separate one. You know.
Yeah, there's like the Israeli side, which is like this really well set up like mass transit system, and then there are these on the Palestinian side. There are just these minibuses that will, you know, just like stop wherever and pick people up.
Yeah,
there's a lot of weird stuff like that. He gets stuck in customs a lot. I don't know. It's a really interesting book, but
yeah,
without...
he was definitely there at some interesting times. Like he's there during the so-called Gaza War when Israel reinvaded the Gaza Strip. Like he's there when stuff's happening, which is not just like, you know, living in a calm society, as calm as, you know, Israel ever gets. But
yeah, like he's having a picnic in like an area that was bombed the day before. It's like weird things. Like
one of the things that the problems I had is that it's not like anything problem with the book is that I kind of read it really fast, and I feel like you kind of have to read it slowly, like a little bit each day, because.
Yeah.
It's like too much stuff. Like, I don't know. I feel like when I was reading it, I was like forgetting stuff because it was like just so much happening and like time was passing by.
It's never really like an information dump. I mean, there's a part where he goes to what is the city he goes to?
Ramallah or?
Yeah. And he's writing a piece for Doctors Without Borders. Like, that part gets a little bit like he gets a lot into the history of the city. Yeah. And that part is like a lot to take in all at once. Yeah. I felt like, but most of it is just. Because he's just dealing with the day-to-day, it'll be like a little bit of information and then like some weird stuff that happens.
Right.
And it can jump around a little bit too much and be
it's
a little bit
jarring. It's a bunch of short
stories,
sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just a fascinating travelogue in a lot of ways. Yeah. Like he ends up, like he becomes friends with a priest of a church and that has a giant bell tower. And they're like, oh, if you want to use this room up in the bell tower as an art studio. He's like, this is the best art studio ever. And then, you know, he tries to give presentations on art in the West Bank and in Gaza and to Israel. And it's just like how art is done in different places and how he can't even get a travel permit to Gaza because they're like, oh, that crazy comic book guy, we're not going to let him go into the Gaza Strip. And it's just like the thing I like about this is the other thing I liked about it is it's so modern. It's like a very different take on Israel than like even going back to Palestine or any of the earlier works with he has an obsession in this book with the barrier wall that they put up around the West Bank.
Yeah.
And he draws it all the time. He's always going to different places and redrawing it.
Yeah.
But it's just like a different take on Israel that I just think people kind of ignore how much society has changed with that wall up. I thought it was very fascinating.
And it's really funny too.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. We should mention that it's really funny when he goes to the church where like, you know, where they keep the stone where Jesus was washed after his crucifixion and stuff. That whole scene is really funny, which is kind of a weird thing to say. But it's like he has no idea what's going on, and they're being like shoved around from room to room, and people are taking pictures.
He's
and
like, "What just happened? What did I miss? What was in there?"
Yeah, he's like, "You know, an atheist doesn't make a very good tourist." In Jerusalem. Yeah, but overall, I thought it was great.
Yeah, this is definitely his longest work. It's like twice as long as his other books. It's huge.
And I do think that the other books maybe being a little more succinct helps them a little bit.
Yeah.
But this doesn't drag. It's just...
No, that's what I was saying. It was just too much information to take in and like...
Quickly.
You know, in a couple hours. You kind of have to slowly read it over time and kind of absorb all of it.
Yeah, like his earlier books, I feel like are books you can read in one sitting, and this is definitely not one of those. I tried.
No, really.
Yeah,
you
do.
It did not happen. All right, cool. Well, that's Jerusalem. I think it's definitely worth checking out, though.
Yep,
it's a good
great.
Book.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on to... It's so funny sometimes the things that happen.
What,
moving
order?
On to Merciless, The Rise of Ming by Scott Beatty and...
There's no segue for that.
Ron Adrian. No, there's no segue. Yeah. Like, speaking of Ming... Yeah, so I don't know. I don't even want to talk about this. Somebody
speaking
else
of things
about
that are foreign. Here we go. Ming the Merciless from another planet.
Talk about
so this
book.
Is a not a, this is a spinoff of the Flash Gordon. What was it, Zeitgeist?
No, I don't think it's a spinoff of that. It's just a
it's
Flash.
Just
Gordon.
A Flash Gordon.
Well, it's the same publisher. This is basically Ming the Merciless before he was the Merciless when he is Prince Ming.
Oh, he's still merciless.
Mongo.
He still has no mercy.
He's kind of a jerk.
He even like yells like I have no mercy or something like that.
Yeah.
I feel like I like this more than Kevin probably.
Yeah, it'd be hard for you to like it less than me.
I don't even know. I mean, it
sounds great.
It's what you expect. It's the origin of Ming, and he's going to some political meetings with all the races in Mongo, and one of them doesn't show up, and so he goes to see what you know why they didn't show up, and he gets in a conflict with them, and then.
He is made a fool of.
Yeah, they like embarrass him, and so he goes back to his like science people, and he's like, "Make me able to fly." And the it's kind of funny at that part.
Yeah, it's really, like, that part is funny.
No, I like that scene because he was like, every time somebody tried to build him something that he didn't like, he would just kill them.
Yeah, he has no mercy.
He definitely was merciless in this.
I like the beginning when he's lecturing his dad about like politics, and then he like pulls a gun on somebody because they won't eat chicken.
Yeah,
yeah, that part's really good. I don't know. To me, this is like if you think about like the Star Wars movies and like how the old Star Wars movies are exciting, and then the prequels are like dumb, boring political stuff that nobody wants to read. That's what this comic is.
Wow. Yeah, especially because it's full of action and like crazy stuff, but it's definitely interspersed
he's really
with
merciless,
a lot of like...
He's really merciless in this
guy. Yeah. Like, this is the kind of stuff that should be in somebody's story Bible, I feel like.
Yeah.
He like, cuts off a queen's head with a fire whip or something like that.
Spoiler alert for the three people that are going to read this comic. Yeah. This is, I don't know.
I actually kind of liked it, but I don't know.
Are you going to read the next issue?
Maybe.
Maybe.
No, you're not. Yeah, Nick reads everything. Maybe. But I think the most important thing here is moving on.
Moving on. All right. So, yeah. All right. So, next up, we've got Play Ball. This is a new graphic novel by Nunzio De Filippis and Christina Weir.
Speaking of Merciless.
Is what? There was no segue there either. They've done a bunch of other stuff together, right?
Well, they're married, so they do tons of stuff.
Who are they married to?
Each other.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yep.
Yeah, so...
But yeah, no, they've done Days Like This. Did they do that one?
No, that was Jay Torres.
They did Maria's Wedding, and that was my
they
favorite by them. They've done a bunch
There's
of
a lot of these Oni people that I get confused, like... anyway.
He's got a new comic coming out on Free Comic Book Day. The first issue comes out from Oni. I forget what it's called, but...
We're just full of information right now. All right, so this comic is about like a broken family who's it's a mom and two daughters, and it seems like the mother and father have just gotten divorced, so they're moving to this new town, and the two girls, Dashiell Brody is the main girl. She goes by her middle name. She's like a bit of a tomboy, and she's a huge baseball fan.
Yeah,
and she went to an all-girls school before they moved, and played on the softball team. But now that she's at a school with baseball. She wants to try out for the baseball team, which is all male team.
Yeah. Yep.
And she gets in, and then it's kind of about the drama that ensues from there.
Yeah, because like her older sister is mainly more concerned about just trying to fit into this new school, make friends, and then you know make good relationships. And
yeah, and she doesn't want her to join the baseball team because she thinks it's going to like embarrass her.
Which it does.
Well, sort of, and then it turns out better. But yeah.
What a twist.
I really like this. I don't know.
I actually enjoyed it. Jared, you seem to have some problems with it from when we were pre-talking.
When we were kvetching.
We talk to each other sometimes when we're not on a podcast.
What? We do?
And Jared said...
Not often. Though.
I'm like, save it for the podcast.
He was like, it was just okay.
It was. I thought like it was a good characters, an intriguing story. It just... It didn't have much drama for me. Like, it was okay. You know, I just, it wasn't bad. It wasn't great. It was, if you want a story about baseball, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't think it was great.
Yeah, exactly.
One weird thing about this is there, I feel like baseball has proven to be a thing that's very adaptable to comics.
True.
Like, James Sturms did a really good job with Golem's Mighty Swing, and then also the Satchel Paige book they did. And you don't get a lot of baseball storytelling in this book, which I don't...
That's true. This is mainly a story about baseball. There's very few, like, actual gameplay or... Yeah.
Yeah, usually you build up to, like, you know, like a finale and something like this, and you would have, like, a game, and you would use storytelling elements
in
that.
There's only two people on base, and yeah.
So I felt like the ending, not exclusively because of that, but for other reasons as well, fell a little bit flat.
Really? I really liked the ending.
Yeah?
Yeah, I thought it was the perfect ending for the story.
Tell us more, Nick.
I can't really tell you too much.
It wasn't the way it ended. It was just the delivery. It wasn't, like, the content. I don't know. Overall, I mean, Jared was saying he didn't think it was very dramatic. I thought there were a few things. There was kind of a bit of a love triangle in here that I thought was...
Yeah, that's true. Pretty interesting. And the stuff with her dad is pretty interesting, you know, yeah, even if it's kind of a thing you've seen before a lot, you know. I don't know. I really liked it. I liked the ending, and I thought the baseball games were fairly exciting whenever they happened.
Yeah.
I think it's just like the two of them have written a ton of comics together, and like I remember, I think the first thing I read by them was Maria's Wedding, which still stands as like one of the best comics I've read. It was just such a good short story. This was like, it was good.
I think the thing is they're trying not to be too preachy about the whole thing. Like,
yeah, you know, that's like, true. They're dealing with like social issues and the parents and yeah,
and it's still kind of kid friendly, like, you know, young.
Yeah, adults. I think that's definitely true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was fun.
Yeah,
I really liked it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess Jared didn't think it was bad. He just thought it was okay.
Yeah, I think it's good. I just wanted more.
Yeah.
So
there's all the glowing recommendations.
Speaking of something else, it's just okay.
What? You're crazy.
I'm insane.
Popeye?
I'm just kidding. It was incredible.
Popeye number one came out this week.
What?
Oh, my God.
This new comic, it's about this guy.
He's got a Popeye.
he eats spinach.
This is... written by Roger Langridge, who people might know from Snarked and
Fred the Clown.
Nobody knows him. It's sad. I guess most people would probably know most from, was it called? Yeah, Mighty Thor, Thor the Mighty Avenger.
Thor the Mighty Avenger.
Which was a great series that got canceled really fast. So this is written by Langridge, but not drawn by him. Drawn by a guy I'd never seen before, Bruce Azzella.
And I was actually at first I was disappointed. I was like, oh man, Roger Langridge can draw a great Popeye. And then I opened it and I was like, oh, never mind.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is...
this guy was born to draw Popeye.
He was. I feel like he's been drawing Popeye since he was born.
Didn't he draw the original Popeye?
He did. He was the guy between Elsie Seeger and Bud Sagendorf. Or at least that's what it looks like on here. So the art style of this is very similar to Seeger's original Popeye stuff.
Very similar.
And then, but also similar to Sagendorf's stuff from the 50s, which kind of was a little more like Max Fleischer's Popeye cartoons.
Yeah. It's a weird blend.
Yeah, but it works really well.
Yeah, so well.
And the story's pretty simple. I mean, the Jeep, if you've read any of the Fantagraphics collections, the Jeep is like Castor Oil's pet.
He's like a weird critter.
A one-of-a-kind pet, if you don't know about the oil family.
Yeah.
There's not just olive oil. There's castor oil and a whole family of... Basically, in typical Popeye fashion, they go on an adventure to find an exotic creature.
Another Jeep.
There's another Jeep.
They think is another Jeep. Very similar to the Thimble Theater story in which Popeye was introduced when they were looking for the Whiffle Hen.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
If you guys have been reading a lot of comics from the 20s recently.
And so, yeah, basically they want to find another Jeep so they can breed it and make more Jeeps and sell them as pets.
Yeah.
There's scheming going on.
Yeah, and they do a good job of integrating, like, basically all the characters, you know, like Wimpy is in here and Bluto and the Sea Hag and... it's just like, I don't know, it's just really well done.
Yeah, it's pure Popeye.
The other thing I'll compare this to is having just read recently the Karl Barks Donald Duck story. It has this very similar fun adventure crazy stuff in it. It was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a lot when we were talking about the Hugo Pratt book about how, you know, like a page of a comic is like, you know, an important thing. It has like a structural integrity
and like a flow
that
and
a flow to it that you know is a good thing to keep intact.
Yeah.
And the guy, I don't know if it was Langridge's script or the art or just a combination of the two, but each page of this you can just kind of flip to and read, and they all read great. They all have jokes in them, very much like a Karl Barks page. Yeah. or the old Popeye sundaes, yeah. And but can pro- like put together, they just make like a seamless story as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just really good.
It's awesome.
There's, you know, Popeye punching sharks in the face, and
yeah.
then Wimpy like takes the shark and like cuts it up and eats it.
Yeah. <I don't know. laughs> It was, so it was also amusing and adventure, and it was so good.
It's got everything you want out of Popeye.
It's got everything. Yeah. I don't know if it's for everybody. Like,
no, see, that's the thing. Like, I haven't read, I've like read some of the old Fantagraphics ones before they did the nice new editions, and I haven't read anything since then. I love this. So I think it'd be pretty good for just anyone.
There's a little, speaking of the old Fantagraphics editions, there's a pirate in here named Bill Blackbeard.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome.
Who was like the guy that collected all the old Popeye strips and has like kind of preserved a lot of these old comic strips. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And it's just a really good, really, really amazing comic, and the best thing I read this week.
Yeah.
It's just
it's
a,
one of them.
It's a 20-page Popeye comic, but I liked it better than Jerusalem. Yeah. All right, so next up we got a book that I didn't get a chance to read because we sold out of it.
Which one?
So fast. The Pterodactyl Hunters in the Gilded City by Brendan Leach.
It's so awesome.
I'm going to sit back. You guys talk about this.
All right, so apparently Leach won the Zurich Award to get a grant to publish his comic in 2010. I wasn't sure if it was for this or something else, but he's also been in the Best American Comics Anthology. So an up-and-comer with some talent. This was packaged by Top Shelf. So the inside was a newsprint paper in the style and practical size of a newspaper. So it's a huge, huge comic with a nice like kind of glossy wraparound cover that's put on it. But yeah, so basically 1905 New York, pterodactyls still terrorize the city, and intrepid hunters go up in balloons with sticks of dynamite and harpoon guns to hunt them down. And that is the beginning of the story.
Yeah. Oh man, I wish I had read this.
It's about awesome.
Like, it's about like the main plot is two brothers.
Yeah, that's the background.
Who hunts these pterodactyls together, and the one is very, very good at it, and he's just like the top, like, pterodactyl hunter, and there's only like two pterodactyls left, and they're trying to kill all of them. And then the other brother is like unsure of himself.
He's kind of the assistant. He's never actually done any of the fighting. He's helping out,
but he works for like the Pterodactyl League or whatever they're called, like the hunter group. And that's basically it's pretty short, so it's hard not to say too much about it. But the art's great. It looks very like Kate Beaton-ish.
Yeah,
is what I
would like some good dynamic action and kind of like shifting. Like he'll draw on a couple of panels, like motion of like drawing things twice on the same panel, so it looks like they're moving. A lot of like kind of grays and stuff. Yeah. And
the only kind of complaint I'd had is that it ends kind of suddenly.
Yeah, but I think it's one of those open ended endings where you can kind of see it going.
Yeah, it's one of those kind of things where it's like you decide what happens.
Is this number one or is this?
I think that's it.
I feel like this is just it, but it definitely feels like there's something, there could be more, but it's one of those things where it ends on a thing, a kind of a cliffhanger where you're like,
yeah,
so what happened?
Yeah, like that.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm on the outside listening to the podcast right now. This podcast is pretty good, you guys. Yeah. Tell me more about this book.
But it's really good.
It's
really
huge,
well made.
Oversized, and it's only $10. Yeah, so it's awesome.
It sounds like a good deal.
It is.
It's incredible. Yeah. This was the best thing I read this week.
Was it? Yeah, did you read Popeye?
It was better than Popeye.
Really?
It was awesome.
So it sounds a little bit. Is it got like an Adele Blanc sec kind of thing going on?
A little bit,
just because there's pterodactyls in it.
But the art looks exactly like Kate Beaton.
Or is it like Cue the Winged Serpent, the Larry Cohen movie from the 70s?
No,
kid that finds a pterodactyl egg and hatches it in the top of a skyscraper.
Nope. There's a pterodactyl attack on a kid, though.
That's not pterodactyl. It's a
Quetzalcoatl.
Quetzalcoatl, whatever.
In Q, the winged serpent?
Yeah. That's what the Q stands for.
Oh, I thought it stood for Pterodactyl.
That's spelled with a K.
I just watched that movie yesterday. I can't believe I didn't know that. But, all right, so that sounds really good.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get a bunch next week. It is awesome.
If we do, I'm going to review it again.
All right.
You should.
Yeah, you should, and you can tell us we're wrong.
I'm going to. I just said I was going to. Don't tell me what to do. All right, so we got one more comic this week. Probably the most important comic that has come out in a long time. This is Wolverine number 305.
This is way more important than Jerusalem.
Yeah. This is written by Cullen Bunn, who we talked about before, and drawn by, is it?
Paul Pelletier, maybe?
There you go. That sounds good. Yeah.
He's one of my favorite kind of comic book artists, like superheroes. Well,
that's a weird thing to say.
He's my favorite, like, superhero. superhero artist. I feel like he's got it down.
He's got the chops.
He's got it.
He's got the guns.
Yeah. His storytelling is really good, and his characters, and he's got a really good sense of scale and
Wolverines.
Yeah, yeah. Like when, yeah.
He's schnicktastic.
He's got a really good sense of Wolverines.
He's got a sense of Wolverines and how they work.
So this story seems to be spinning out of a story that I didn't read. There. Which was in Wolverine Weapon X by Jason Aaron.
Was that? I was like, I know I've read this character before. I couldn't remember what it was
from. Yeah,
it was
so, Dr. Rot.
Yeah, Nick, you love this stuff.
This I is Nick's
wheelhouse. Why don't you tell people what is happening in this Wolverine comic?
This was a lot better than Captain America and Hawkeye.
It was, actually. I thought so, too.
Yeah.
Basically, Dr. Rot was this guy who ran an asylum and was taking people's brains out and using them to build an army of...
Like you do.
Crazed things. I don't know. And this
Assassin's
Wolverine is kind of on his trail, and he ends up in the old asylum that they used to be in, and he finds a bunch of crazy mutated brain people and fights. There's not a lot that happens in this. It's very, like, introductory.
Yeah, but the opening framework is that Wolverine might still be under his control or going insane and murdering people under this guy's control.
Yeah, like a bunch of dead bodies turn up, and they're like, oh, it looks like Wolverine did this, and a little kid draws Wolverine, and... so you're not quite sure in this if Wolverine is actually fighting brain people or if he's just killing a bunch of random people. It's cool. I liked it.
I enjoyed it. I'm not usually one to complain about, like, oh, Wolverine's in too many comics or whatever.
Yeah.
But it seems like Wolverine right now, he's like running a school.
Yeah.
And like fighting a war. And
fighting the Avengers. Yeah. Or he's fighting the X-Men.
He's fighting in that thing.
Yeah.
So for him to be going off and like getting drunk and going to a sanitarium seems like a little weird.
Well, that's part of the plot. It's like they do have scenes back at Xavier's where they're like, oh, he's not even here. Didn't he leave a note? Yeah. And like, oh, God.
That's one of the funny things. Where we're like, shouldn't he be running the school? He's always gone.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I actually forgot about that part. Yeah. Never mind. I'm going to edit that out once I learn how to do that. So... I don't know. It's I guess, a good start to the story.
I thought it was good writing. I think the one problem with this, it doesn't say new creative team like Captain America and Hawkeye did on the front.
Yeah, I think what I found out afterwards is that they're only doing, like, 6 issues or something.
Yeah, it's a new creative team.
Yeah, that's almost hardly worth advertising at this point, though. It's like if anything, that's, like, a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, my one
it's
thing,
like, hey, those last guys, they only wrote it for 4 issues.
That's true. But the thing about this is, like, having read the Weapon X stuff, I knew what was going into this, and, like, unlike the Cap and Hawkeye one, this one, it's like, if you don't know that, it's kind of like, why does this matter? It explains it, but it just...
Yeah, it's cool, because the last issue was Jason Aaron's last issue, and it wrapped up all of his stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And there was actually a thing in it with this Dr. Rock.
Ah, okay.
And he gets kicked out of, like, a nightclub. It's actually really funny.
Yeah, but see, when I got to the end of this, I was like, they were like, it's Dr. Rot. He has a really stupid name. His name's, like... Algernon Rotwell.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
I saw it. It was on his file.
Yeah.
And
but he's kind of supposed to be, like, really kind of goofy, over the top. Like, he's supposed to be exactly. He's very much like Dr. Pig or whatever from, like.
Oh, Professor Pig?
Professor Pig from the Batman and Robin comics. I love
Professor Pig's really messed up.
He's messed up, too. He's, like, exactly like that. Yeah.
So when I got to the end, I was like, oh, okay. And then I, like, went on Wikipedia to find out who he was. Because I had no idea. But it was fun. I'll read the next issue of this.
Yeah. The art was awesome.
Yeah, I love that.
The backup page in the Wolverine comic is called The Cutting Edge.
Nice.
Just so you guys know that. Yep, comic books.
That's what they do.
Gotta love them. All right, so that's it for reviews this week.
That's all we got.
Did you guys read anything else exciting this week?
Oh, yeah. What did I read? I read Super Crooks number 2. Oh, I read a couple number 2s. Yeah, I think Jared read them, too. Super Crooks number 2 and Edwardians number 2. Because we don't... We usually go into the number 2s too often.
It's good to let people know if they're still good at least.
And we talked about Super Crooks, about how, like, there wasn't a lot in the first issue. And this one has a lot more of the world building kind of stuff. And you kind of get more of a plot. And this is like
sets up the plot.
This is the putting the team together issue of, like, a heist movie. And they're all, like, ex-supervillains. But then you get a little bit more of a sense of the world where, like, there's this guy who's, like, a fallen superhero who's working as a bodyguard for this, like... super, like, the greatest supervillain of all time who lives in Europe. And basically, like, this sets up the big plot that they're going to rob, like, the greatest supervillain of all time who's living in Spain.
Is it Vladimir Putin?
No, actually, his name is
now we're going to get killed by that KGB Kevin.
It's really funny.
They're going to poison my fish.
Yeah. His name is Christopher Matz, a.k.a. The Bastard.
Mark Miller strikes again.
Yeah, it's really good.
People love to have stupid names in comics.
Yeah, and it's not, like, it's not as Millarish as usual. Like, it's not,
yeah.
Like, it's kind of over the top, but not, There's no, nothing mean spirit. Like, it's not very mean spirit. It's pretty typical.
It's got some.
It's like Ocean's not like 11. Nemesis or Chaos or something.
It's exactly like Ocean's 11 with supervillains. But
yep. In fact, the back cover is the eight of them walking forward in a nice Ocean's 11 pose.
Yeah.
Yep. But yeah, still good.
And New Deadwardians.
Yep.
Builds upon the first issue, a little bit of the mystery and stuff, and you get like a little more understanding of the world and how it works. And then it seems like in the next issue he's going into one of the other zones, so you'll see more of the world.
Oh, that's cool. Cool.
Zombie zones, hopefully.
And Jared, you read the graphic novel adaptation of the novelization of the musical Oliver?
I did read most of it. Yeah, this one was originally done in France as five books, and it was put together in a single one. It's mainly that the art on this is astounding. Like, yeah, it's like we were all talking about earlier. There's like everyone's read or seen or heard or, you know, Oliver in 600,000 different ways.
Yeah. This is Oliver Twist, not what I said, by the way.
Oh,
it's adaptation
right.
Of
see,
Oliver
I didn't
Twist.
Even think about it. I just assumed it was like, yeah, Oliver. Yeah. But yeah, the I can't remember the guy's name.
Oliver Twist.
Deloy, whatever. It's the French guy. We'll put his name up on the webpage. But yeah, the art's astounding. It's super cartoony. I don't even know who I compare this to, but it's just great.
Yeah, it seems in keeping with some of the other stuff they put out recently, like the Tom Sawyer book. And
yeah, just
these awesome.
The really good adaptations they've done over there. The story's just the straight adaptation of the book. I've only read about half of this version of it, but it was really well done.
Cool.
All right.
I read the first three issues of Crossed, the new series, Badlands.
Nice. You didn't read the fourth one?
I haven't read the fourth one yet, no, but I just read
that. That was the first story arc.
I reread the first issue and then read two and three. And
it's good?
It's really good.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Crossed is Crossed. Yeah. It's always a little bit of the same thing.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It's balanced with, like, a lot of human.
Yeah, a lot of the character stuff is really interesting. Like, the decisions that people make in these kind of really messed up situations is always pretty interesting. And there are some pretty messed up decisions made in this book.
Yeah, definitely. The fourth one that just came out was really good, too. It's a new direction.
Yeah, it's not maybe as gory as the other Crossed.
Definitely not as gory as
Psychopath.
Psychopath was rough.
Offensive more than gory in a lot of ways.
There's a part where there's like a guy that's like kind of slowing them down, and so they cut his Achilles tendons and leave him for the cross to eat.
I forgot about that. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's that.
It's still not as bad as anything.
All right, cool. See you guys next time.
Yay. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I think that's it. So you can think about that and try to get sleep.
Yep.
Yeah,
sweet dreams.
Sweet dreams. All right, see you later.
See you.